it's about time.
Okay, well, this is going to be a meeting of the Idaho Water Resource Board, meeting number 12-14, November 12, 2014, being held in the director's conference room, plus on participation by phone. With that, I guess we call the roll.
Okay, Mr. Cuddy is absent. Mr. Alberti?
Here.
Mr. Stevenson?
Here.
Mr. Rabels?
Here.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Here.
Mr. Graham?
Here.
Mr. Barker?
Here.
And Chairman Chase?
Here.
Okay, we have seven present.
Hey, Brian, I'll turn it over to you.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, first item on the agenda today is the Aqualife facility. Just by way of some background, I think all of you are up to speed on this issue. In our negotiations with the proposed tenant, the Idaho Groundwater Appropriators, and their negotiations with their proposed subleasee, I guess, it became apparent that it would be desirable to acquire the remainder of the land owned by the Idaho Department of Parks and Recreation that is adjacent to the Aqualife facility, primarily for biosecurity reasons with fish production. So with that, John Holman has met with staff from Parks, and Parks has agreed to sell the remainder of that parcel to the Water Board for a cost of $250,000. You should have received a map showing generally the parcel we're talking about, as well as a resolution that would authorize moving forward with acquiring the remainder of that land and expending the $250,000.
I've got all that. Any questions?
Brian, this is Pete. Could you define for me again on the map which of the parcels that are new, or is that the outline of the total parcel now?
Okay, yeah. What's on the map is the outline of the total parcel.
Okay.
What we have acquired is where the fish hatchery is shown.
Okay, up at the north end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, on the one end. So that totals about 17 acres, more or less, that the fish hatchery sits on.
Okay.
So what we would be doing is acquiring basically the remainder of that parcel. It would take it up to 90 acres total, give or take.
This is Rod, your question. I think we already discussed this. When you look at that property line that on west side down there by the fish hatchery, there's part of that little stream or that outlet that goes off our land and on the private land. There's no easement issues there, are there?
Mr. Chairman, this is John Holman. There is some sort of an encroachment there. At least this line shows that. The property's been recently surveyed. As far as we can tell, that there isn't any issue there. There's a public access next to it. So other than that, I'm not aware of any issues there.
Good. Other questions?
Yeah, this is Bob. With the money that we paid Parks and Rec originally for Aqualife plus this $250, what is there money left that the legislature has given us to begin with, or not?
Mr. Chairman, Bob, this $250 would have to come out of your accounts.
So we used up all the money that the legislature gave us?
In fact, the legislature did not give you any money to acquire Aqualife.
They just told you to do it.
Although they gave the board lots and lots of money for other purposes this last year, so.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, this
Ryan, is sorry, Roger.
Go ahead.
Okay. So just so I know, the purpose of adding this additional land is because the potential lessor of the property, or sorry, lessee of the property, believes that they need that additional land in order to make this a viable fish hatchery?
Mr. Chairman, Al, that's correct. The current, what we bought from Parks does not include the spring head, the spring source, or that pond that the spring's empty into. The potential lessee believes that they need to have access or control, be able to control access to that spring source for biosecurity reasons associated with raising fish for commercial sale.
Do we have an indication of what they're willing to pay in a lease yet?
That's a great question. We have discussed this with IGWA and made them aware that the board expects to be cost neutral in this additional land purchase. But we haven't sat down and figured out what that means in terms of revising the lease terms.
And what's the length of the term of the lease?
We've been discussing 30 years.
Okay. What were the lease terms before we got into this agreement? When they were leasing it, I don't know if that was month to month or year to year.
Oh, the current lease on the facility?
Yes.
Okay, CPAC currently leases it on a month to month lease for $3,000 per month.
$3,000 per month.
The business calculator says that we need at least another $1,150 a month for this additional $250,000 expenditure.
Yeah, I think that's that. You're in the ballpark, Vince.
Yeah, that's based on 30 years, 3.5% amortization.
Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. Wouldn't we want to apply that same principle to the entire investment we have there, not just the additional $250,000?
Well, this is Roger. I think we should try to recoup all our money.
Yeah.
Is that a problem, Brian, you think?
Yeah, what our intention would be to recover the entire investment over the lease term. What we've been discussing is 1644 per CFS, or $1,644 annually per CFS of flow. And the facility has about 35 CFS of flow, give or take.
Mr. Chairman, this is John again. At least preliminarily, that lease has been negotiated. We've been kicking around a figure of $1,644 per CFS. That is what CPAC has indicated that they were comfortable paying. That seems to be, at least the research we've done from the other facilities fed by Springs there, seem to indicate that that's a fair price, or at least in the ballpark. The total of that for the Aqualife facility came to around $57,000. And so this additional cost to acquire this buffer land would be needed. One approach, short of IGWA just outright paying the $250,000, would be to include a figure such as $1,150 on top of that $57,000. So including another $12,000, $13,000 a year, whatever it works out, on top of that $57,000.
John, does the $57,000 recoup our entire investment before this $250,000 purchase?
Over the period of time, Brian's doing the calculations right now. I think there were discussions early on, Vince, if I'm not correct, where we were talking about a 3.5% or a 4% return. My recollection, it fell somewhat short of that, but it was close.
Close. Recovers about $1.7 million over 30 years. It's close.
But at the end of the 30 years, did they own it or do we own it? Is this just a 30-year lease or is this a lease purchase or it's a lease?
Mr. Chairman, it's a lease. There's no turning it over to the lessee at the end of 30 years. I mean, somewhere along the line, you can negotiate additional terms, but the way it sits right now, at least preliminarily, all the terms of this lease are preliminary because they haven't been finalized, but it doesn't anticipate turning it over to the lessee.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. I think we can work out the nuances of the lease arrangement and make sure that we're getting the proper return on our investment at a later date. I think the action today would be to approve the resolution, and I would move to do so.
Second.
Any further discussion? Now, one thing just for me, when we do the lease with IGLA or whoever we do the one of the, in that lease will also include the day you have to maintain the land.
We've already let IGLA know that they're going to be on the hook for doing that.
Even if
their terms with CPAC under the sublease are somewhat different, you know, IGLA would still be on the hook under our lease.
Okay. Any other comments?
No.
Call the roll then, please, Mandy.
Okay. Mr. Alberti?
Aye.
Mr. Stevenson?
Aye.
Mr. Raybould?
Aye.
Mr. Vandermeulen?
Aye.
Mr. Graham?
Aye.
Mr. Barker?
Aye.
And Chairman Chase?
Aye.
Okay, we have 7 ayes.
Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Next item on the agenda is related to the Spokane River, and I think some of the board members asked that this be put on the agenda after seeing the presentation from the Guy Gregory from the state of Washington last week at the Idaho Water Users Association. So I'm going to turn it over to Neely Miller to just provide an introduction and status report on where we're at on this issue.
Thank you, Brian. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm going to provide a little bit of background on these moving pieces that are taking place on the related to the Spokane River, the Rathdrum Aquifer. First, as Brian indicated, you saw a presentation at the Idaho Water Users last week on the proposed Washington in-stream flow rule. That would be to set a flow target for the river throughout the year, and it would have, I think, 3 different timings and 3 different flows throughout the year. And they're working on that now. Comments were due last week, and I think if everything proceeds as planned, that rule is scheduled to be adopted in early 2015. I think that the actual date they're looking at is January 15th, 2015. We saw the flows presented
by the state of Washington will be adapting that rule?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That is a proposed rule by the state of Washington. And we saw that presentation from Guy Gregory last week, and he indicated that that rule would only have any effect in the state of Washington, but it would be the section of the aquifer and the river located in Washington, not Idaho, is the language, is the authority they have for that proposed rule. There is a question as to whether if they did have that authority to reach across the state line, if that rule would impact in Idaho, if if that ever played out in the future. So we had that piece presented to us last week. The other piece that we heard about last week was at the board meeting. Dr. Dale Ralston and Gary Johnson presented their gave a presentation to the board on the Spokane River groundwater pumping study. And the purpose of this study is to gain an improved understanding of the low flow conditions in the Spokane River from water and groundwater systems and provide a basis to evaluate that result in the model. And the results to date indicate that comparisons between the Post Falls and Spokane gauge were made, and it was discovered that when June-July discharges at the Post Falls gauge were low, the flows in the Spokane gauge in late August were always low. And they've created graphs to show the impact on the flow in the Spokane River from pumping at various locations with various pumping scenarios. Significant lag in river depletion as the response to pumping was observed at many locations. And they also demonstrated their spreadsheet tool where you can look at different scenarios and pumping scenarios and see what those impacts on the river would be. That study was initiated in February 2013 and is scheduled to be completed in February 2015. Just to highlight a couple pieces here that were talked about during that presentation, I think Dale highlighted that the Spokane River loses water to the aquifer between the gauge near Coeur d'Alene to Post Falls and then between Post Falls gauge and the Green Acres gauge. That stretch of the river is perched. The river does lose water, but it's not directly linked to the aquifer. It loses it to the groundwater system and then recharges the aquifer. The Spokane River gains from the aquifer between Green Acres and the Spokane gauge, and this is the hydraulically connected reach. And some of the key points presented in that were that wells in that hydraulically connected reach, this is that Green Acres and below to the Spokane gauge, have the fastest response with the greatest percentage of impact on the river. And those wells in that Green Acres and above reach are more distant from that hydraulically connected reach of the river and have a more delayed impact on the river. And Dale talked about a couple scenarios that he looked at, you know, adjusting pumping levels from winter to summer, from summer to winter, and looking at what that impact would have on the river in those areas that are hydraulically connected. And we did see a significant impact, but I do believe that it still would not hit that minimum flow that is proposed by Washington. So other measures would potentially be looked at, but I think those are down the road. I just wanted to refresh our mind here as to what was presented last week. So moving that piece to the side, now I'm going to talk about the Rathdrum Prairie Future Demand Study. And I will say here that when I finish a brief update, we do have Mark Solomon on the line. He's with the University of Idaho, Iweary Institute, and he's the lead researcher on this study. And he can provide an update and talk about some of the issues he's encountering and maybe give us a sense of how many municipal providers are anticipating making RAFN applications associated with the study and how many of those may occur prior to that proposed Washington in-stream flow rule is adopted. So again, just a reminder, this study was funded out of the $15 million. There was $500,000 in that was designed to fund future demand studies in northern Idaho prior to any conflict with the state of Washington. This contract is for a little over $200,000 with the U of I. It was started in September 2014 and it is scheduled to be completed in May 2015. Mediation has been completed. They have reached agreement on the service areas for those municipal providers. Future demand work is ongoing, but I believe the bulk of it is scheduled to be completed by the end of November. I spoke with Mark last week, and he indicated potentially 9 Rathdrum Prairie Aquifer municipal providers are likely to submit RAFN applications. Mark indicated that one of those is a city. The others would be associations, water districts, irrigation districts, so they would be these type B and C municipal providers. And right now, Mark is working with the department to clarify some of the documentation that may be required for those municipal provider RAFN applications, particularly those type B and C. I've been talking with Matt Weaver on that, and he's trying to provide some clarification to the RAFN guidance. There was a list of documents provided in that guidance. It was not intended to be exhaustive. He's asked folks in water rights to research other types of documentation that could be provided by those type B and C municipal providers. And he has indicated that he would like to have that information by next week so he could provide some feedback on these questions to both Mark Solomon and the municipal providers in the Rathdrum Aquifer that are considering making RAFN applications. So with that...
Neely, this is Roger.
Yes, Roger.
A question on those municipal applications. When will the... Talk about nine has made, I guess, and some of those were associations look like are ready to make applications, and then there were some more that were interested. Will that be all the cities up there, all the people that are eligible, will they be applying, or are there some who are not doing anything?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to hand it off to Mark Solomon at this point. He's worked directly with them, and I'll let him answer that question. But right off the top, I would clarify that I believe what Mark has indicated to me is that there's about eight or nine entities in total that are looking at making RAFN applications. A portion of that eight or nine would be cities. I think the city of Rathdrum is one. The others would be these type B and C type municipal providers. And those would be associations, irrigation districts, and other. I have code or language from the memo. I could read off what those are. But I'll let Mark maybe discuss who's interested and what type of entities those are and what the schedule looks like for submitting RAFN applications and if there's any obstacles in the way that the board could perhaps incentivize folks to make applications. So with that, Mark, if you're on the line, I'll let you provide, you know, a little enhanced update based off of what I've provided.
Thank you, Neely, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. First, regarding the question of the cities and their interest in applying, the cities of Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene, Dalton Gardens, and Hayden are not interested in applying for two reasons. One, three of those entities are essentially completely built out to their planning boundaries of their areas of city impact and have adequate water rights currently to supply any further development that they foresee. The city of Post Falls has much of their water provided by the type B and C corporations, the East Green Acres Irrigation District and the Ross Point Water Association, and those two entities cover the undeveloped properties within the City of Post Falls area city impact. So they would not be applying for a RAFN application themselves. Instead, those type B and C water associations that are covering the undeveloped ground within the Rathdrum Prairie are interested in applying for RAFN rights. The City of Rathdrum will apply for a RAFN right as well. Neely made a brief reference to a discussion that was currently ongoing with the department regarding interpretation of documentation necessary for the water associations and districts to apply for the rights. And let me just back up a little bit and give you what I believe was the intent of the legislature when they wrote that particular section. They were looking at how to thread the needle between speculative water rights and the genuine right of a municipal provider to be able to hold water rights for future development. And as such, they made reference to, for the cities, being able to apply for rights within an established planning boundary adopted through public process, which most have interpreted to mean an area of city impact. When it comes to these other irrigation districts and associations, though, their language was simply the area that they are authorized or obligated to serve, because those different types of entities do not have a public planning process. Instead, they operate more on a market situation in which a developer or a landowner comes to them and says, we would like to be annexed into your district for provision of water service, and then they then change their boundary. So the initial guidance prepared by the department for those associations referenced documents such as preliminary plats, landowner agreements, and other documents that were clear and identifiable within some type of legal or quasi-judicial framework. That doesn't really serve the purpose of a long-range planning horizon. And it certainly, in this instance on the Rathdrum Prairie, does not serve the purpose, as I understand it, of the board or the state of Idaho in protecting Idaho water resources for future economic gain and development. What I have proposed to the department through Neely is based on the successful mediation of the desired future service areas amongst the various districts and associations, that we develop a memorandum of understanding that identifies those areas and is signed off on by the governing boards or their authorized representatives for each of those districts as a common document that essentially identifies all the land that is potentially developable in the 30-year planning horizon and assigns a service provider. If that type of document would meet the somewhat complex intersection of speculation and municipal rights and satisfy the department without establishing a unwelcome precedent that would be utilized in other areas of the state, I think I would be able to pursue that on behalf of the department and the providers with the eight associations that have indicated that they are interested in expanding their Raffin area right.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, this is Jeff. I've got to jump off the call. I'll catch up with you later and get a conclusion of this meeting from you.
Okay.
Okay. Sorry about
thanks,
that.
Jeff.
Thanks.
Oh, that's okay. We really had that meeting scheduled.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bob.
Go ahead.
I think most of the members may realize it, but the open areas on the Rathdrum Prairie and are really adjacent to Hayden and Coeur d'Alene, and those areas are highly, highly susceptible to large developments. They're occurring there now. They fill up rapidly. And all that farmland that shows up in that Rathdrum Prairie diminishes because of these developments. So I would suspect that in our long-term plan of Rathdrum, a lot of that land now that is irrigated would come under domestic water systems.
Mr. Chairman, Al Barker. Jeff and I talked about this a little bit after the presentation at the water users, and what our purpose in trying to get this on the agenda was not to delve into the details of the individual applicants, how they we're going to comply with the law and what the law means or any of that kind of stuff. It was just to raise the awareness or try to get an awareness raised on behalf of these people up in the valley or up in the Coeur d'Alene Basin that they need to get these applications on file prior to the time that the state of Washington issues this in-stream flow ride so that they can have their priority dates ahead of the Washington priority date. Not that Washington can call out the water right under a Washington adjudication, but if we ever get into a fight with between the states, at least we will have the priorities established. And so the goal wasn't to really get into the details. The goal was to see whether the board could suggest very strongly to the folks who are working with the applicants and the users up there that they need to get their applications on file and they need to do it now.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this is Mrs. Barr. We are on target for providing the necessary background information for credible applications to the providers by December 15th. That's been our target all along, and we should be able to achieve that. The providers are well aware of the state of Washington's intentions and are fully intending on moving forward as quickly as possible to submit those RAFN applications prior to January 15th. The major obstacle, however, is the one I referred to regarding that documentation. If that documentation requirement is left as is or is only adjusted in some minor way, other than the city of Rathdrum and possibly one association, I would not expect to see any RAFN applications because the others would not be able to provide any type of documentation. So they are all eagerly waiting for the advice from the department. And anything that you as the board could do to assist the department in reaching that determination would be very useful.
Thanks for those clarifications.
Roger?
Go ahead.
That MOU that you referred to there, does that solve that problem as far as making those applications available?
Excuse me, this is Mark again. This is a discussion that Neely has brought within the department, and we have yet to hear back as to whether or not that would meet the review requirements of the department.
Mr. Chairman, yes, this is being considered within the department. Matt is having a water rights staff do some research on this and look at other types of documentation that could be acceptable. And this question of an MOU proposed by Mark, that is also under consideration. I know that that research is not complete, so I don't want to guess what that outcome would be. But Matt would like to have that answer early next week prior to the Spokane River Forum conference. I know he's working with staff in-house. We do have Jeff Peppersack in attendance today. He just wanted to sit in and listen to this discussion. He will be participating in that conversation about what type of documentation would be used or accepted. I don't think we need to dwell on this too much in this call, given that an outcome has not been made by the department. But I think hearing this concern may be useful in moving the discussion forward. But I don't think we're going to reach any outcome on this call about what would or wouldn't be acceptable. But it definitely sounds like, from Mark's perspective, that this is an important piece in terms of some of these RAFN applications moving forward over the next month or so.
Well, Neely, this is, from my perspective, I feel the same as Al there, that the sooner we can get this thing wrapped up there to protect those people up there for future times, would sure be beneficial to that community.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I think it would be a great accomplishment to get nine of these in, and moving forward, you know, following the guidance of the legislature and making this investment and this type of work worthwhile, meeting those the intent of the legislation. I think some of these questions can be answered, and I'm hopeful that we can resolve this in a way to where all eight or nine of these entities can move forward. But I don't. There's no way we can jump ahead of this step. I think we have to wait for the department to make a determination as to what documentation would be useful. And I don't think we're going to do that over this call.
This is Roger again. I guess one thing, I guess, is everybody in the department knows that this is important to the board to find a way to make this work, not find a way to make it fail. I'm passing that along, unless the board disagrees with me. And then the second question, if we determined that one time we'd asked Harriet to look into, is there any way that the state could hold any rights up there? Does that make any sense to keep pursuing that? Or with the work that Jersey Vital is doing, does that make any sense?
Mr. Chairman, that issue was discussed, I believe, at both the July and the September board meeting. And I believe Harriet Hensley is on the line and could provide some input or feedback on that conversation.
Mr. Chairman, this is Harriet. Yeah, both Clive and I advised the board last summer that obviously there's no statutory way for the board to hold a water right in trust in the future. And so I think that the plan you have in place is a good one in terms of helping these entities file applications that will satisfy the department's requirements.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bob.
Go ahead.
I wonder, they've referred to these as associations. Would it be useful for those associations also to become districts, taxing districts, which up here sometimes is very difficult to get the voters to approve, but in the case of the threat, possible threat from downriver, it might be viable for those associations to become taxing districts if that would also give them more protection. Did everybody hang up?
No. No, Bob, that's the chairman. Not a bad idea, but they don't have time to do that.
Yeah,
they've got to get those out. They can't wait to get their applications in, I don't think.
That, Mr. Chairman, Bob, Al, this is Mark, this is correct. Three of them are irrigation districts formally established through the Bureau of Reclamation. And the rest are water associations or water districts. And I think they would all be very reluctant to become taxing districts.
Because it may not, the voters may not buy into it, or they themselves don't want to be one?
They have different histories. They have different reasons as to how they became an entity. And I would also have to say, looking at the map, that any expansion that they might anticipate if they were a taxing district, then becomes a much more procedurally difficult and lengthy operation. I think they enjoy the flexibility that they have at this time in providing the service that they do.
Well, the idea that it would take too long is certainly very valid and viable, but it also might give them further protection sometime down the line.
That would be possible if there was a statutory change that recognized a taxing district water entity as a municipal corporation under Type A with those planning processes.
Mark, this is Neely. Just to follow up on these nine entities that are likely to submit RAFNs in the next month or so, is there any other pieces that are moving that we should be aware of in terms of that may potentially pop up and may need to be addressed that may slow down that process? Or is this really the only item that seems to be a question?
To my knowledge, this is the only issue that is of significance. I will have the first major report from SPF Water Engineering on the current demand by service area in my hands today, where I will then get slowed down is understanding what the future service areas are so I can make the appropriate population projections and then make the appropriate water demand calculation and then do the water rights gap analysis. So it's all dependent on understanding what the future service areas are going to be. I will proceed at this time as if we are able to meet the requirements of the department and use the service areas as wished for by the association and as mediated amongst them to ensure there is no overlap. But it all could go backwards if we do not get the appropriate documentation requirements.
Thank you.
Other questions? You know, I always have questions. Let's say we get all these districts and cities make their applications. There would still be water that's unused up there or unappropriated, I'm assuming. If there were calls, or maybe calls is not the right way of wording it, but if there was a court decision that said the tribes need more water for flows or species issues come up, is there water to accommodate that, or would the cities and these entities have to be curtailed somewhat? Or can you even answer that?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I can't answer it specifically. I can answer it generally that for almost all these entities, when they will be expanding into a undeveloped area, that undeveloped area almost always has an associated irrigation water right that they would, generally speaking, apply for transfer to their municipal need within their RAFN right. And generally, the demand from development of a similar area to that was irrigated is less than the irrigation demand. So even though it is somewhat counterintuitive, covering the prairie with houses will actually improve flow in the Spokane River.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chairman, that is all I had for this item. If there are any additional questions of Mark or myself, I guess I would just leave it at that. And
Mark, yeah, we appreciate that. Board, do you have any other questions on this? Is there anything we need to cover still on this?
Oh, I'm fine. Pete?
I'm fine.
Okay, I'm guessing there's nothing else we need to cover. Brian, what's our next, is there adjourned or is there anything else?
Mr. Chairman, if there's nothing else, next item is adjournment.
Motion to adjourn.
Second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thanks everybody. Thank you guys for all the work on this.